Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, American Animals, and Izzy Gets the F Across Town. That's actually the title. I'll also be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, a Jurassic Park retrospective, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Unsane. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can also find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I wanted to start off the show by giving a warm welcome to the new affiliate for Fat Guys at the Movies, News Talk 1530 and 107.9 WENG in Englewood, Florida. You can hear me every week, Fridays at 3 p.m. So welcome aboard the Fat Guys train. And now to move on to some other news. It's the 50th anniversary of a lot of things. 1968 was such a huge year for entertainment and politics in America, because it was really a turning point from the early 60s into the late 60s, and things were really ramping up. And I know I talked last week about the Fred Rogers documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, but I also wanted to give a little bit of shout out to one of my dad's favorite movie of all time. That means nothing to anybody but my family. But 2001, A Space Odyssey, celebrates its 50th anniversary this year. And one of the things they've done is they've restored the 70mm print of the film, and it's being shown around the country in 70mm format. Now, this has been going on for a couple weeks. It's actually in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio, at the Gateway Film Center, and it plays through early this coming week. So if you've never seen this movie on the big screen in 70mm, now's your chance. And this is one of those films that calls for it. And yes, it's a 50-year-old movie, and yes, it's not going to be the same as watching an Avengers film, but it certainly is wonderful to look at on the big screen in a true 70mm format, and there have been more 70mm projection opportunities to witness. So a little bit of shout-out to the 50th anniversary of 2001, A Space Odyssey. The next actual piece of new news is, finally, after John Lasseter had an unceremonious exit from Pixar due to unspecified work issues, Disney and Pixar have finally announced who's going to head both Disney and Pixar, because Lasseter was in charge of both of those arms of animation. And I know a lot of people think, oh, everything's Disney. But Pixar is very specific. Pixar was another company that then was acquired by Disney, what, about 10 years ago or something like that. And now they've decided to give that top spot to Pete Docter. Now, if you don't know who Pete Docter is, he's one of the directors of many of these films. He directed Up, which is a beautiful movie. And I believe he also directed Inside Out. He's a very high concept thinker, and he comes from the old school of Pixar with all these people who had worked in Pixar for, he's been there almost 30 years, something like 28 years. So I wouldn't expect a huge change in the Pixar output, because sort of the figurehead, the person who's making those decisions from the ground up, is from the same animation school, so to speak, and philosophy as John Lasseter. So that, I think that's a great choice. Pete Docter has done such, like I said, some out-of-the-box stuff like Inside Out and Up. I'd like to see him push more of that than just sequels. I loved Incredibles 2, and I thought Finding Dory was perfectly charming, but let's do original ones as well. And that's, I think, where Docter's probably going to take this. Now, the more interesting choice was actually Jennifer Lee, to bring her in and head Disney Animation Studios. Now, that's important. That's a huge role, because until recently, it hasn't been the moneymaker for Disney that they always wanted it to be. Back in the day when they were doing Cell Animation, and they were doing movies like Home on the Range, which starred Roseanne Barr as a cow, it didn't do well. Even though I thought Home on the Range was a charming movie, when they were transforming from a Cell Animation house to a CGI house, there was a rocky road there. And John Lasseter kind of righted that course and sent it in the right direction. But now that he's gone, I was just hoping that they got somebody who has at least a vision for that. Now, Jennifer Lee is best known for directing Frozen, one of the biggest animated movies ever. And I think that that's great. That's very forward thinking. I mean, she's been involved with like Wreck-It Ralph, and she's somebody who certainly has a vision for the future and understands animation and can set that up from the figurehead level. Although the difference is that she's relatively new, but that's okay because John Lasseter was new to the Disney Animation Studios line and he basically gave it the Pixar treatment. So seeing Jennifer Lee continue on with what she did with Frozen and really kind of made that an indelible mark on Disney Animation, I think that's very exciting. One final piece of news, and I'm not going to spend too much time belaboring this because it's another one of those Me Too stories and taking somebody down, and that was Chris Hardwick. This week, his ex-girlfriend had posted an article on Medium basically saying all these horrible things that he did. She accuses him of like sexual assault, and she accuses him of being overly controlling. And then suddenly everyone acted very swiftly and pulled him from his talk show. He's no longer doing panels at Comic-Con, and they just kind of cut him off at the legs. And look, I have no skin in this game. I do not like Chris Hardwick. I have never liked Chris Hardwick. I don't know him personally, but I've always felt his image was sort of like, yeah, he's the nerd, but I'm the cool nerd, and you got to follow me. And he's sort of like, you ever have that friend who was kind of the geek, but he had like his minions and his acolytes that always followed him and always hung on his every word? That's what Chris Hardwick always felt like to me. He always kind of felt arrogant and obnoxious, even in his most nice interviews. So I don't care. I am happy to see him go because I've never liked him. The only thing I find a little bit disconcerting is the complaint. It was not even a criminal thing. I don't think there's anything in there that you can prosecute on a criminal level. It's just more they don't like him now. People are like, oh, now it's okay to not like Chris Hardwick. He could weather this. Who knows? I don't know what's going to come of this, but I have a feeling they're going to have people who will know him. They're going to get anecdotal evidence and people are going to question him a little bit and kind of put him under a microscope, which is fine. Put people under a microscope. I don't care. Put me under a microscope. I don't care. But I always have an issue with the situation of somebody just going online, publishing an article on Medium and being able to take down someone's career because that's a dangerous path to run down. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is The Nun, which is the next part of the Conjuring spinoffs. It opens on September 7th.
I had a series of visions when I was younger. And after each one ended, the same thought would be stuck in my head.
What did you see?
I saw a nun. Word of my visions reached the church, and I was asked to accompany a priest to an abbey in Romania.
The abbey has a long history, not all good.
You know, I'm sold. I like this Conjuring run of films, even stuff like the first Annabelle, which was okay, and you know, the Insidious movies that are kind of cut from the same cloth. I love that new breed of horror, and I'll watch any of these, and I think because it comes from Conjuring, it's going to be R-rated. I just hope this is good, solid, and scary. I like this as mainstream horror, so yeah, this looks interesting. I like going kind of into the past in some of these as well, which is what they did in the Annabelle movies. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Creed 2, which opens on November 21st.
In the ring, you got rules. Outside, you got nothing. Life hits you with all these cheap shots. People like me, we live in the past. You got people that need you now. You got everything to lose. This guy's got nothing to lose.
I ain't got a choice.
That's the same thing your father said, and he died right here in my hands. Listen to me, this guy is dangerous.
But you don't think I could beat him?
Now, you don't hear in that trailer he's ultimately going to be fighting Ivan Drago's son. And if you know anything about the Rocky series, Ivan Drago was the bad guy in Rocky IV who ended up fighting and killing Apollo Creed, which was the kid's father in this movie. The Rocky movies tend to be pretty good. Even Creed, which I thought was overdirected at times and ran a little long, I thought was a good movie. And it'll be nice to see where this goes. It could be terrible. Who knows? It could be overly weepy. It could be overdone. It's not directed by Ryan Coogler, who handled Creed pretty well. But then he went on to direct Black Panther, which was certainly a good move for it. Anyways, that is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be doing a retrospective of the Jurassic Park films.
We'll be right back.
back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's start off with the show, not with movie reviews, but a look back. 25 years ago, Jurassic Park first came out. Now, the thing with Jurassic Park, you got to realize there was a book before the movie. And I know that sounds stupid to say because that's a no-duh because it was written by Michael Crichton, one of the most famous authors at the time. But I imagine that there's quite a few people who don't actually realize the Jurassic Park movie started out as a book. I read Jurassic Park, the book, before the movie, and it was before I did film reviews. I was in college at the time, and I really got a jump on this, and I loved the book, and it was made into a movie, and I thought the book was great, but I thought, like Jaws, it was a very different movie, because Steven Spielberg does that. He can take a book that's a good book and really change it quite a bit and still make a good movie. But that's what started the train of CGI dinosaurs. And I think that was a turning point in terms of special effects to actually see dinosaurs realized on the screen. So let's start with the first Jurassic Park. A team of scientists are invited to a wildlife preserve in which dinosaurs have been brought back to life.
There it is.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
We've made living biological attractions so astounding that they'll capture the imagination of the entire planet.
I can't get Jurassic Park back online.
Like I said, I read the book before the movie, and so the book was its own thing, and it had things happen very differently. I mean, the general story was the same. Scientists invited to a park, and then what could go wrong? Everything goes wrong. But the difference is that there was a lot more science, and there was a lot more minutiae that Crichton always put into his films. And like I said, Jaws is a very different book than the movie, but just like Spielberg did with Jaws, in some ways he improved it. He did a better job with the kids, certainly, in the movie. But Jurassic Park was such a great movie, and it was groundbreaking. It's one of those movies people don't realize what it was like to have never seen that stuff before, because you hadn't. The closest you ever got was either stop-motion animation or something like the Rancor monster in Return of the Jedi, a mixture of stop motion and puppetry and slowing down the frame rate. But this is the first time you ever saw dinosaurs on the screen, and it was fascinating. But even now, when it came out a couple years ago in its 3D version, it still was a great movie. It still is the best in the series, easily. So that's a testament to Steven Spielberg. It's really what put him back on the map as a blockbuster director. And he did it as a 1-2 punch with Schindler's List that year, and he won the Academy Award. So that's kind of amazing as well. So I'm going to have to say Jurassic Park, the original, totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Now, of course, back in 1997, after the 1993 release of Jurassic Park, which made almost $1 billion at the time, it was like $900 million worldwide. They had to do a sequel, and so they worked on the sequel. It took them 4 years to do it, and it was Jurassic Park, The Lost World. And with the exception of the Indiana Jones movies, I believe it's the only sequel that Steven Spielberg has ever directed. Ian Malcolm returns to the island of Jurassic Park to help rescue the dinosaurs from exploitation.
A British family on a yacht cruise stumbled upon Site B.
And now it's only a matter of time before this lost world is found and pillaged.
Ooh, that's how it always starts. But then later there's running and screaming.
Now this one I was also very excited for. I even remember going the opening weekend. I went with my wife. By that time I was married. And I saw the movie and then I left going, huh. It just wasn't as good. It really felt phoned in. Now on top of it, I read The Lost World because that movie also started out as a book. Michael Crichton wrote it. And if you read Jurassic Park, there was a passion behind it, and he was really interested. If you read The Lost World, it really feels like Michael Crichton was just doing it for the paycheck. Because he's like, oh God, I hate dinosaurs, but I got to write this book because they're paying me $1 billion to do it. And that's totally what the movie felt like. The movie doesn't make sense at times. It gets in its way. You've got them trying to save the dinosaurs, but then they make them escape. And then they go rampaging around San Diego. And it really felt like Spielberg was phoning this one in. So I have to say The Lost World is nonsensical and stupid and not very good. And I'm going to have to say it kind of sucked.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into Jurassic Park 3. Alan Grant travels to a dinosaur-infested island to help rescue a child who has gone missing.
I've chartered an airplane to fly us over Isla Sorna, and we'd like you to be our guide.
We have a landing strip up ahead.
You cannot land on this island.
Oh my God! Let's all die!
They can talk to each other.
To a degree we never imagined. You probably won't get off this island alive.
Instead of getting Jeff Goldblum to play Ian Malcolm, they got Sam Neill back to play Alan Grant. And I thought that was great, because I always loved him as a character. I thought they didn't use Ian Malcolm very well in the sequel to Jurassic Park. But Jurassic Park 3, I actually have to say I like this movie. It's not great. It's kind of a disposable garbage movie. But I have to say, I've always found it enjoyable. It's a dinosaur romp. Rampage, and it didn't do terribly well compared to the other two. Now, Joe Johnston directed it, and he's, of course, best known now for directing the first Captain America movie. But this was his film, and I enjoyed it. He also did Jumanji. It felt sort of had that same sort of action and flair. I mean, it didn't have the board game and the kids element to it, although there's a kid in it. But I found this one a great little jungle adventure. I love little jungle adventures, and I thought this one worked. And, you know, I'm sorry, people. I know people resoundly hate Jurassic Park 3, but you know, doggone it, I liked it. I'm going to have to say it kind of rocked.
It kind of rocks.
Fast forward, what was that, like 14 years? In 2015, they finally made another Jurassic Park movie, which was called Jurassic World. 20 years after the events of Jurassic Park, a new dinosaur attraction is successfully opened, only to have things go terribly awry when one of the genetically engineered monsters escapes.
Every time we've unveiled a new attraction, attendance has spiked. Corporate felt genetic modification would up the wow factor.
They're dinosaurs, wow enough.
She was designed to be bigger than the T-Rex.
You got 20,000 people. You don't have enough guns.
First of all, I thought that Chris Pratt was fine in the movie. I didn't think it was overwhelming. I mean, I thought he was a better star in the Lego movie as well as Guardians of the Galaxy. But he was certainly a passable star of the week kind of guy in this movie. I liked Bryce Dallas Howard in the film. And I thought that it tapped into the nostalgia perfectly. I mean, obviously, with Jake Johnson and the Jurassic Park shirt and them telling him, oh, this is insensitive, and having all the references to the first movie, and then even having the elements with where they actually get a little bit meta, because there's a scene in there where he says, aren't dinosaurs enough to get people excited? And she's like, no, people, you know, the whole generation grew up with dinosaurs. And that's very true about the movie. It's not just enough to put a dinosaur on the screen, because people have been doing that for 20 years. They had to do something different, and that's why they did this genetically altered dinosaur. It's a certainly a fine action movie. It works for what it is. I was really surprised at how well it did. It was one of those $200 million opening weekends, which blew everybody away. I was not expecting that. I thought that it was a fun movie, but it was sort of unprecedented how well it did. And I think it just tapped into nostalgia. Nostalgia works, especially if you're working in a 15-year window. That's what happened with Finding Dory. That's what happened with The Incredibles 2. And that's, I think, the reason Jurassic World did so well. Yet the sequel is already tracking lower. But still, I'm going to say Jurassic World kind of rocked.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to review the new Jurassic Park, which is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, as well as American Animals.
Now.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the actual movie reviews for the full-blown movie reviews for the new films this week. Starting off with the one everyone's been waiting for, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. After the fallout from the Jurassic World disaster has settled, a wealthy investor sends a team to the island to rescue as many dinosaurs as they can before a volcano wipes them out again.
How many can you save?
11 species. Blue is the last of her kind.
You'll never capture her.
We thought you might know someone who could help.
A rescue op? What could go wrong?
It was all a lie!
The man who proved raptors can follow orders.
You never thought how many millions a trained predator might be worth?
They're a salvo.
Not Blue. They need it for something else.
I love the Jurassic Park movies. Even though there was that little hiccup with The Lost World, I thought, as you heard in the last segment, I love Jurassic Park. I thought Jurassic Park 3 was fun, and Jurassic World was a okay reboot. But there was just something not sitting right with me when it came to this sequel. And it's not that they were making a sequel, because you knew they were going to make a sequel. The thing made like $1.5 billion or more. But ever since the first trailer dropped, which I think was on the Super Bowl, I was just kind of underwhelmed. And the basic gist is they're going to this island to save these dinosaurs because there's going to be a volcano that's going to wipe them out. And it does try and tap so hard into the nostalgia because they have this whole thing. And this is not a surprise because you see it all over the trailers. Ian Malcolm is testifying in front of Congress. And he's basically advocating to let the dinosaurs get wiped out by the volcano. Because he's like, look, these creatures were chosen for extinction by natural selection, and now we're bringing them back, and they can cause a problem for us, et cetera, et cetera. And I get that. Ian Malcolm has his own history with dinosaurs. He has had some bad experiences. But this movie just felt so much like a redo of The Lost World. If Jurassic World was a somewhat remake in spirit of Jurassic Park, this was a remake in spirit of The Lost World. And that's a dumb idea, because if you look at Jurassic Park, it made like $50 million its opening weekend, which was record-breaking at the time, back in 1993. And it went on to gross like $900 million worldwide. And then Jurassic Park The Lost World came out, and I remember it was held up, at least at the time in the late 90s, as one of the examples of a movie that had such a huge opening weekend. I don't remember what it was, but then it quickly fell. And it was one of those movies that made half its money its opening weekend. And that showed that it wasn't that good. And I don't know very many people who will defend Jurassic Park The Lost World, because they all know it's kind of garbage. And that's what this felt like, all the way from the sort of the weird animal rights message that they have. And look, I don't care if you put that in a movie, but it just seems like a tired idea. And of course, the person who's the big animal rights advocate in this movie is the Bryce Dallas Howard character, who was, of course, running the park in the first one, which seems a bit disingenuous. And they really kind of bend over backwards to get Chris Pratt in the movie. And it's all about this volcano. Everything's the same. They got these people trying to save the animals, but then they got mercenaries on the islands that are going to kidnap the animals and then exploit them on the open market. And they can even have a point where they like have a weapons dealers are coming to auction it off. And I'm like, really? What are you going to do with a dinosaur? There's even a scene in there where they say, well, you know, we've used animals in warfare, like elephants. And, you know, they don't use elephants in warfare now. They have tanks. It's just mind-boggling that it was actually written that way. Ultimately, this movie feels like it was like two or three different movies that they had like a couple ideas of where to take the sequel, and they said, instead of choosing one, we're just going to do all of them, and they kind of mash them together. I mean, the whole volcano bit's only really the first half of the film, which is fine, because I didn't want to see them running around the island for an entire 2 hours. But that's not the movie, and it reminds me of, do you remember the movie Australia, the one that Baz Luhrmann did? Like, 10 years ago or something. That was one where it felt like he had two different movies, but he knew he wasn't going to get the money to do a sequel. And they just crammed them together. And that's kind of what this one feels like. And that very much like The Lost World, which had all the stuff on the island, and then they get to San Diego, and they go running rampant on San Diego. On top of all that, there's nonsensical writing, just bad writing, where they've got like the benefactor for this, who's played by James Cromwell, who's basically like Richard Attenborough as Hammond in the first film. But he has the granddaughter that has the weirdest plot device that makes no sense, and it has no payoff whatsoever. It's like they wrote this character and they had a whole storyline for her, and they just got rid of the storyline. They have this big reveal and you're like, you so what? Because it has no impact on anything. Plus, the movie is derivative of everything. It's derivative of The Lost World, and then it borrows from bad movies. Or lesser movies. I think that's sort of the theme. It's like, well, we don't want to rip off really good movies, so let's rip off secondary films. There's a scene in there that literally rips off Jaws 2. Jaws 2! Rip off Jaws if you're going to rip off anything, but Jaws 2? That's what you're going to rip off? It just doesn't make sense. I really wanted to like this movie because I love the Jurassic Park films. And look, if you want to just go on the baseline and say, does it have dinosaurs and do they run around and do they eat people? The answer is yes. If that's what makes a movie work for you, you're going to get that. You're going to get that in spades. There's lots of dinosaur actions, and the The animation is great. The graphics are great. But as a character piece, it's kind of all over the place, and you don't know who's doing what and why. And the action is so disjointed from scene to scene. It just doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. This is like, essentially, if you love Transformers movies, just because it has cool action and there's robots beating each other up, you're going to like this because there's cool action and there's dinosaurs eating people. But if you want something more than that in your film that you plop $10 to $20 down per ticket to go see, I don't think you're going to get it. And like I said, I really wanted to like this one. I mean, sometimes you go into movies going, oh, this is going to suck. And then you go see it and it sucks. And you feel like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I went in hoping it was going to be good, but it really isn't. And I every turn, every minute, I'm like, oh, let me just give it a chance. No, that doesn't. Oh, that doesn't work. That doesn't make sense. I don't know. Maybe it'll grow on me. Maybe this is going to be one of those movies that in 30 years, people are going to like it the way I unironically like Halloween 3. Which probably was a terrible movie back in 1983 or 2 or whenever that came out. Anyways, I have to say, I'm sorry, but Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about American Animals. Four students at Transylvania University in Kentucky attempt to steal a set of extremely valuable books from their school library.
How can I tell you if I'm in or I'm out without you telling me the first thing about what I might be in or out of?
This would be something dangerous and very exciting.
Boom, boom.
This library is home to the most valuable book in the United States.
$12 million. You really need to see how easy this is going to be.
Oh, you know this from all your previous heists?
In a summer where you've got Ocean's 8, Soderbergh's heist movies, you know, everything from the Ocean's movies to Lucky Logan, I get tired of seeing movies where everybody's great at their job. If you are tired of that too, you're going to want to see this one because it's about these college-age students who are trying to do this heist, but they do all this planning, but like the world is, things don't always go as planned, and there's always things that get thrown at you, and they're not good at what they do, and that's kind of what makes it entertaining. It also shows how hubris can really take you down, where you think, oh, it should be easy to just steal these books, when it really isn't. And by watching movies too much, and watching too many of these, like Soderbergh, Ocean's 11 movies, you think it's going to be easier to pull off a really cool heist. There was an old episode of Laverne and Shirley where they had to break into somebody's office. There's always these in old sitcoms. They had to break into somebody's office and they had the whole scene where they were planning it and it all worked perfectly. And then they go to make it happen and it just completely falls apart. And that's kind of what this is. The other thing I found most interesting about this movie was they got interviews with the real people and those were interspliced within the movie. It's a daring choice for an actual narrative feature. But it worked, and I thought that was the most interesting part because you really kind of got to see inside these people's minds and how they look back on things and how they remembered things. It's not anything groundbreaking. It's not anything that's going to like win any awards or make a lot of money, but it sure is worth checking out, especially if you want to see what happens when real people try a heist. So American Animals kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to review Izzy Gets the F Across Town, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Unsane. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews with Izzy Gets the F Across Town. And yes, that's the name of the movie. Yes, I'm not really swearing. They bill it. If you look at the name of the movie, is actually use the expletives in there. But if you look it up and you go to like a theater, a lot of times they'll list it as Izzy Gets and they'll use the letter F. It's an independent film. A failed LA musician struggles to make it to the other side of town to stop her ex-boyfriend's engagement.
Where are we?
In an apartment.
And how did I get here?
I don't know. Who are you?
I'm Izzy.
Roger, I'm waiting. The party's starting soon. I need to get there.
You're going to break up their engagement? It's over.
Nothing's over till I say it is.
You're aware of how insane that sounds, right?
Let's say you do make it to Roger, then what? All your problems disappear. You abandon me. I stepped off the Titanic before you had an iceberg. Every place I go today, there's some sign confirming for me that this is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing.
A couple months ago, or may have even been a year by now, I reviewed a film called, I think, literally Right Before Aaron. It starred Justin Long, and it was about a guy who found out that his ex-girlfriend is getting married, and she's getting married to the guy that she started dating literally right after she broke up with him. And this was one of those over-drenched, whiny garbage movies about Justin Long's character just true up pining for and trying to catch up with her and could say, hey, he's her true love and he's got to stop it at all costs. And I hated that movie because he was a horrible person. Just live and let live. You do not deserve to go wrench somebody's relationship apart just to fulfill your stupid adolescent fantasies. And that's just a bad person. He was bad. And that's what I don't like movies about bad people unless it's fun to watch them, their lives implode. Like if you're watching something like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia on TV, they're horrible people, but it's fun to watch their entire existence fall apart. But that's why I hated that movie. And I feel very much the same way about this Izzy movie. It's about a woman. And I say woman because she's pushing 30 at least, the character is. And she just doesn't have her S together, something to go in spirit with her, the F in the title of the film. Her main goal in her this life at the moment is to stop this engagement from happening, to get in the way. And yeah, there's a history there, and he's like getting engaged to one of her friends. First of all, it's just pathetic. I'm sorry. You break up, you're done. Just deal with it. This whining and trying to get what's in the past, if that other person broke up, just leave it. And she's not letting go of the past, and it makes her a weak person. And yeah, I mean, Mackenzie Davis plays the character, and she does a good job acting in it, but she's given a horrible character. She's not a good person. And I couldn't root for her. And it just gets worse. And then the resolution in the movie is so bad. I'm not going to give it anything away, but it does what it absolutely shouldn't do in a movie. And then it does, again, what it absolutely shouldn't do, because it's both cliche and horrible. There are some interesting parts to the movie, partly because it's shot in a lot of ways like a 90s independent film. I mean, I don't know what it was shot on. I have a feeling it was shot on digital, but then treated to look like 16mm, but it may have been shot on 16mm. But a lot of the scenes feel like something that was shot on like 16 or Super 16 back in like 1995. Sort of this independent film world where they were still shooting film and they couldn't shoot video, and it was before DV showed up and mini DV. So it had that like a very rustic grassroots. It feels like one of those movies that you could still play in underground cinemas coming out of the 80s. So there's a certain aesthetic to it that I think is really cool. And it has that sort of that punk band soundtrack. And part of it, I mean, that's fine. I'm not a huge fan of punk music. But part of the catch to this movie is Carrie Coon playing Izzy's sister, and they used to have a punk band, basically. And they have a scene where that's all about the song that they need to perform, and then they perform the song, and I'm like, that's kind of a garbage song. It's not very good. So that's actually a great symbol of the movie. It's held up to be something great, but it really wasn't. Full stop. This movie just annoyed me, and I'm sure if you like those movies where people are just trying to catch their dream of an old relationship that died and won't let it die and come up with a zombified relationship, if you love that sort of thing, then you'll probably like this movie. But if you're like me and you're annoyed with it, you will probably hate it, which I did. Izzy gets the F across town. Totally sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about the box office. It was a huge weekend for The Incredibles 2. Made almost $183 million for the whole weekend, which is phenomenal. That's the highest gross any animated film has ever done. It broke out over Frozen. It's not the highest in any live-action movie, but it's up there already. Not a whole lot of movies have done that much in its opening weekend. Tag did okay with about $15 million. Came in under Ocean's 8, which was just under $20 million. Solo, A Star Wars Story, is still $10 million. It's going to crack $200 million soon, so it'll hit that double century mark. And I think overall, too, you know, if you look at the international box office for Solo, you know, it's a total worldwide, it's like about $350 million. And yeah, that's low. It's certainly low for a Star Wars movie, but that is hardly franchise fatigue. Part of it is Star Wars isn't as popular overseas as, say, like the Marvel movies or the Fast and Furious films. And then Superfly, I guess, did right around expectations, probably lower with less than 7 million. And then the big one, the big surprise with Gotti, which nobody reviewed and everyone hated, made less than $2 million, didn't even get in the top 10, which is terrible. Now, of course, the big movie that's going to win this weekend is Jurassic World. We're just going to wait till Monday to see how much it ends up making over the whole weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The spotlight this week is on Unsane. Claire Foy plays a woman who inadvertently commits herself to observation in a psychiatric facility where her stalker has managed to get a job. Go figure.
Your life slips away from you, you know? Changing your phone number and your email becomes normal.
But you still see your stalker everywhere?
Rationally, I know this is my imagination, but I'm alone in a strange city and I never feel safe. There's been some kind of mistake.
By signing this, you've consented to voluntary commitment.
I am being held here against my will.
Do you know how many calls the cops get like that every week?
Those are from crazy people.
There's somebody in my life, a very close personal relationship I have, who had spent some time in a hospital. It was actually a nursing home facility, and it was awful. It was terrible. It was like 6 weeks of hell. And I was visiting this person when I went to go see this movie back in March. And I told him about it after I came home, and it was really a horror story to him. Because he was in a facility that didn't care about him, treat him like a number. I mean, didn't have like some stalker coming after him, and he didn't have this sort of like mental suicide watch thing that goes on in this film. But there's some real problems with certain facilities out there. And I mean, Soderbergh blows it out of proportion with this movie to make it terrifying, because it does play like a horror movie. But there are some real problems in certain facilities, and there's some real fraud that goes on that take the stalker edge out of it, take the ability to manipulate things behind the scenes. And you do have facilities that do operate not quite above board and take advantage of people and are in it for the profit, and strictly to profit, against people's better well-being. And while this person in my life didn't have the insidious nature that was in this film, this person certainly understood. And I actually showed this to him just this last week, because I felt he'd been out of that facility long enough that I could show it to him. And it really cut close to the bone, and it was a real terrifying movie. Now, like I said, there's a lot of differences to it, but I mean, talk about seeing somebody relive it. It's like taking somebody who's been in war and showing them a war film or something like that, I would imagine. I mean, I've never been in combat, but I've heard people who have been in combat respond to films like Heartbreak Ridge and stuff like that. So this is a very well done movie, and watching it a second time really makes me appreciate it. And it's one of the better horror movies of the year. Now, people will say it's not a horror movie. It's just a drama. It's about a No, this is bona fide straight up horror movie. Even if you just listen to the soundtrack, hear the soundtrack in the trailer, it sounds like a Phantasm movie. It's straight up horror. It's not ghosts and goblins and demons and werewolves or anything like that, but it certainly is stuff that's really of an insidious nature, and it's powerful. And it's a well-made film. And I like it even more now. So I'm going to have to say this one totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
The other releases this week, Pacific Rim Uprising is out on DVD and Blu-ray, as is Midnight Sun, which I can't guarantee I'm actually going to watch or talk about anymore than that. So sorry about that, Patrick Schwarzenegger. And that is it for this week. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Sicario 2. And Uncle Drew. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.